Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. This episode is brought to you by One Cause, the presenting sponsor of RAISE, the event fundraising conference. One Cause invites you to join them at RAISE, being held this year in Washington, D.C. on September 14th and 15th. RAISE brings together hundreds of fundraising professionals, industry experts, and nonprofit speakers to share insights and network with others who are innovating in the world of fundraising. To join the community of fearless fundraisers attending RAISE and learn more about the conference, please visit www.onecause.com/responsive50. That's www.onecause.com/responsive50. Hi, Michelle and Darren. This is Jason on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, and you are our guest today. I'm looking forward to this conversation. We've been on the pre-record here for a few moments. That sounds like we're going to have a lot of fun. Before we get started, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. My name is Michelle Gilmore, and I am calling in from Southern California. And I am the Senior Director of Development at the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, as well as co-author of Eventology with my fabulous partner, Darren Deese. And we are here today to chat about fundraising.
Absolutely. Like Michelle said, her fabulous partner. Now that that's on tape, we have to use that. My name is Darren Deese. I'm a fundraising benefit auctioneer. And Michelle and I met years ago. She hired me to do a job, and all of a sudden we became close friends and now business partners. And I love working with Michelle. She brings all the energy and excitement. So let's jump right into this call.
Yeah. So before we get started with the conversation, I really want to hear about this book because it's got a great title. And the two of you said that you co-authored it together, and you're sort of operating in two different worlds, both on the payroll at a charitable organization and also doing some consulting. So tell me about this book.
So the book is Eventology, the Science Behind Nonprofit Fundraising, and it started as a project where we were noticing that there was such a common pain point, if you will, with organizations that we would talk to, either from my own personal experience working with a few different nonprofits that I've had the opportunity to be a part of in terms of staff and or volunteers. And then fast forward, as Darren was diving into the auctioneer world, he would sit down and have conversation after conversation with people who would say, oh no, we can't do this. This board will never approve that change. No, we can't get rid of the silent auction. Oh my gosh, everybody loves to come to our event and shop. Or, oh no, we have to do live speeches and give away awards at the event because that's why people come. So we noticed that there's a pretty stuck in the mud mindset, and we were trying to convince people and different organizations that we talked to about having some innovative ideas and making some changes, even small ones, that might really help move their events along. So we decided to write a book about it.
Yeah, I'd say that about sums that up, Michelle. Great. Thanks for taking all my words. Appreciate it. Like you said, she's the one. She's the one behind it all. Definitely, Michelle, I think my first phone call to Michelle, I was with a client sitting down. They're like, how do you do this? I'm like, I get the question because I'm in there and we're talking about fundraising and trying to elevate everything they've got coming forward. And they ask the really basic question. I'm like, hold on real quick. Let me put Michelle on speakerphone. I would call her. I'm like, hey, you got a minute? No. Well, let's talk anyway. I got a question. And she'd answer questions for clients. And that just kept happening over and over again. I'm like, why don't we try to just put this together? And it's been a phenomenal relationship. And Eventology would have never have happened without Michelle's input. And I think y'all will notice that really quick.
Well, let's jump into this. So you guys have told me before we hit the record button that a lot of the book and a lot of the work that you do together is getting people to sort of shake up their resistance to change. Why is it when it comes to fundraising in the nonprofit sector, why is it that you think on sort of a high level, and we'll sort of dive deep into this one today, that nonprofit organizations when it comes to fundraising are so resistant to change?
Yeah, I would say Darren and I might even have a little bit of a difference on this. So this will be fun. I would say that people are resistant to change globally because fundraising itself, I feel like, is a behind the times industry. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that even though, you know, set my current job aside, because I work for a vibrant national organization, Cystic Fibrosis Foundation is well-funded, managed, very corporate structure, that kind of thing. But that is not the typical, fundraising organization. And what most fundraising organizations we speak to, nonprofit after nonprofit, is that they're very, very frugal, don't have enough money to maybe invest in technology, might have a board that's been sitting on the board for 7 to 10 years, and really being able to break out of the mold of where they want to go, even though they can see that, is really difficult. Maybe just because of funding. What do you think?
My take on that is I think people are afraid. Some people are afraid to take a chance, and change is often equated to risk. And when someone takes a risk, they get comfortable in their jobs. Like you said, Michelle said she's very spoiled. They've got large budgets, and you can make little mistakes and not necessarily have huge consequences. And so many nonprofits are just starting out, and they really gamble. And they look at it as a gamble and a risk. And when something worked last year, the easy thing for a nonprofit is let's just do that again and hope for the same results. And Michelle and I often say, hope is not a plan, and it definitely isn't. But that change is a huge risk. And some people fear that if I mess this up, I'm brand new in this job. If I mess it up, I'm not going to get back. I'm not going to be rehired again. And the development officer, I think, Jason, this has even come up in a few of your podcast episodes, is that individual role is so commonly replaced. I think the average job director of development is 16 to 24 months.
Yeah.
And people get really kind of nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a high turnover, and they get nervous about it because that job is so dependent on fundraising that they just want to plug in and put the square in the square hole. And where we're asking them to really think differently about it. It's a huge risk, and some people are afraid to fail. And I think failure is kind of what builds you and makes you better.
So, Michelle, I want to hang on your comment about fundraising being behind the times for a moment, because I had someone tell me that. Somebody pointed that out to me, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. It was probably an academic who said it to me. And I would probably say, and if you guys listen to the podcast, you probably routinely hearing me say this, that I believe fundraising is in its messy adolescence, which is a hard notion for some people to swallow. But I actually think the idea that we just haven't grown up is an easier sort of swallow than to say that we're behind the times. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I absolutely agree. And it's kind of a match in thinking, if you will, because with a messy adolescent viewpoint, you can see there's so much potential. And actually, this is why Darren and I wrote the book. You're right on it, because I see so many times I'll walk in, even when I started this new job about a year and a half ago, I walked in and I thought, wow, why aren't we doing this? Like this, we could kill this event. We should be making $500,000, But it is that same piece. It's the same mindset, because it's really about how can we take what's the formula, right, to bring the correct people and not just get people there, but the right people, and then steward them in a way and build the relationships with them to then maximize a long-term strategy of fundraising. Well, it's an adolescent environment because not everyone's there yet, right? And I totally agree with you. But then on the flip side, I feel like there's so much tradition in fundraising and what worked 5 years ago, even, Jason, right? 5 years ago, we were sending letters out all the time with an envelope, hoping everything would come back. Well, no. I mean, look at the generation Y and Z, and even me, who's generation X, like I'm online. Everything needs to be digital. Everything needs to be a very short for a shortest attention span. So I think you're right, but then I think it works both ways, you know?
So Darren, the comment about risk, because I'm right there with you, but I'm thinking about my messy adolescent 17-year-old right now. What is it that we've got to understand as it applies to risk to my, if we're messy adolescents, what do we have to get?
I think comfortable and trust.
Yeah.
When we have an opportunity to work with clients and kind of earn their trust.
Yeah.
We see most development directors and event planners that are not event planners, but event coordinators within the nonprofits that are putting these things on. They, like Michelle said, and they're at, you know, this works. Let's just do this. Oh yeah. Let's change the color this year. That'll blow everybody away. Or let's change the theme. That'll totally make a difference. It's getting comfortable and trusting others to help you. Sometimes I feel in my role is I come into this again from I'm an auctioneer. I get this title. You're the auctioneer. You just talk really fast and you do your thing. And we only need you to show up for an hour. Like if I show up for an hour, there's going to be a mistake because there's all these things we didn't think about in setting getting the mindset changed from the donor. And when you get caught in that comfortable field and you don't want to take the risk and do things differently, the donor's just starting to expect the same thing over and over again. And we want to push them to change. And trusting others to help you on that way. A great example is, executive director or development director. And we've been doing it this way for 10 years. Don't come in here and make a change. Like, well, that's great. But since you've been doing it that way, now is the time to make it to change. Most companies that started 10 years ago are guaranteed you're doing things differently now. You have to evolve. You have to be, you're back into that messy adolescent side of it. We've got to grow up. We're 10 years old now. We should be doing things a lot better than we did when we were three. And that's really hard for some people to understand. But when they see that, and they're working with a professional team of consultants that do it day in and day out, I mean, the best compliment I get is when I share examples of what we just did last weekend or the weekend before, or the weekend before. I'm in this every weekend. I'm doing new events. And I see the trend, I see the changes, and we take it and we grow and we add little pieces at a time, and it really starts to affect the outcome. And the guests leaving the event, whether it's a gala or it's a breakfast luncheon or it's a meeting with five or six donors with capacity that really love an organization, all those things are planned for. And when you make those little changes, you really start to see different results. I don't know if I totally missed the mark on that one, but
I think you did fine. Does it? I'm interested to hear your thoughts because these nonprofit organizations, they enlist us like to come in and provide them counsel and advice and direction and that sort of stuff. What is it about the those of us in that posture? Because I've done the consulting work myself, and it sounds like both of you have done some of that. What is it that we're doing wrong? Is there anything that we've got to improve on? If fundraising's in its messy adolescence, the profession itself, is the consulting space got to do a little bit of growing up as well?
I think so. But you know what's interesting about that is I would say that what I think we have to do is be very fluid. And what I mean by that is Darren and I have had in this last year, we've had probably 7 or 8 potential clients call us to come in and sit down with them and talk about what they need and what they're looking for from a consulting, you know, standpoint.
Yeah.
And we'll sit down and have that initial meeting, and we go down and we write all the notes, and then we put together a proposal, or we submit it, and then we end up working with them. And it's something that's totally different than what we talked about.
Right, of course, yeah.
They're like, oh, well, we didn't know that we needed to do this, you know, whatever it might be. That they thought they had a full board.
Oh, we're supposed to follow up with donors?
Right.
Right. But like the problems, you know, and so that's what I mean about being fluid, is mostly like really embracing what's going on with that organization. And then even if it's not in our area of expertise, finding a you, Jason, or somebody who's really great at strategic planning, because as we get in there, we see, wow, what they really need is a global strategic planning, you know, consultant. Like, not even us. They're not ready for us yet, you know, whatever it is. But I really think that identifying lanes and then being able to have a resource of that, I think would be a cool step in consulting.
Yeah, Darren, I'm curious about pacing. The Michelle's comment about pacing. Do we move too quickly or are we too slow?
Ooh. I would say, personally, I don't want to speak for the industry, but I'd probably say I'm probably more on the quicker side. I want to jump and I want to get right into it.
Yeah.
And where Michelle's going to kind of back up and, all right, let's look at this differently.
Sounds like we're talking about gender roles or something.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no, slow down.
Sorry.
Going back to the question you had on kind of, you know, what can we do better about this? I personally feel that as consultants, because kind of where the question started, as consultants, I think we sometimes come in and the director of development or the team that we're working with sometimes may fear that we're going to take their job, that we're going after their job, or that we're going to make them look bad. And it's 100% the opposite. Is we don't want their day-to-day job. We want to just help them do better at their job. Michelle and I, when we work with the clients, we always say, we don't want to be a line item in your budget for the next 2 or 3 years. You know, this is a 6-month or a 1-year agreement. We just want to get in and help and offer you some support and, you know, show you the trends that we work with every week, every day with every client, and bring that into your organization and help you. And I think that's kind of a fear thing, because we jump in, all right, let's look at all these different things. And they're like, wait a minute, slow down. We can't do all that right now. And
I think it's
just fear of taking their job. And that's 100% not what we want to do.
Well, and if I can interject one thing, I've been, you know, we were talking about mindset kind of earlier, right before the call. And one of the things that we come up against is that, you know, the board, kind of a board makeup, if you will. And I even heard it on one of your recent podcasts, Jason. You guys, someone was talking about, you know, time, talent, and treasure as values.
Yeah.
And I would set that aside. I mean, that's traditional, right? That's just kind of a traditional, you know, those are traits for sure. And you definitely want to have a balance of those on your board. And that's still true now. But I would say that we need to be looking at values a little bit differently and look at courage, consistency, and collaboration. Those are our three C's that we use a lot in the book. And, you know, having the courage to make some changes, having the courage to define board terms that are like 2 years, 3 years, but then, you know, have an actual plan, consistency in messaging and branding and the way you interact with your donors. And then collaboration is key. We talk a lot about that.
Yeah, I really like that word courage. Darren, what unpack the word courage that she's introducing there.
Oh, wow. Thanks for putting me on the spot on that.
She threw it out there. You get to have fun with it.
Gee, thanks a lot. I think courage is really kind of getting over that. It goes back to what I said earlier about risk.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a strong emotion. And when you do that, the courage, you're trusting somebody else to help you get over the line and meet your goals, exceed your goals. And that is, I mean, courage is probably even a better word than risk. You can't do it alone, and bringing in tools, you know, Michelle and I often try to say, you know, we're just a tool. We're going to help make it easier for you. When you use the right tools, the job's a lot easier. You know, we talk about leverage oftentimes in some of our workshops that we do. We talk about using leverage and, you know, stop tripping over you know, dimes to get dollars or dollars to get dimes. I always mess that up. That's it's trusting people and using the right tools. And courage is a big part of that, I believe.
And overcoming fear. You know, we talk specifically, we have something in the book that we say, you know, the fear of the ask. And that's common in sales. It's common in fundraising, for sure. And then what the courage to overcome that and give tools and strategy around that.
So I find it particularly intriguing. I do want to talk about, I wasn't kidding. I was only partially kidding when I was talking about gender roles. So here we have two individuals, a man and a woman, who are doing consulting work. And you're talking about courage. You're talking about courage and you're talking about, you're talking about courage and trust, and to make sort of some sweeping generalization. So forgive me for doing that, but sometimes women are on the more trusting side, and sometimes us fellas tend to be the more courageous. We'll just sort of box ourselves in and for the sake of conversation. Is that some of what's
going on? Well, thanks for calling me out there. I appreciate that.
Is that some of what is going on here? Is that women, you know, women are maybe more trusting and men are more courageous, and maybe we need to share some of those skills with the other ones?
Aaron, I'm going to let you take this one first, and I'll cover whatever you.
You're gonna ponder. You're gonna simmer on it for a minute, huh?
Yes, I've enjoyed this format
because the reason I want to bring this up, the reason I want to go there is because Michelle, you know very well that 80-90% of the people that we work with, that I work with as clients, for example, and certainly when I'm speaking to an audience of fundraising professionals, it's primarily women.
Yeah.
So it's a real topic. So I don't know if I'm being terribly eloquent with it, but I'm sort of interested in your thoughts as you've both sort of brought these two sort of headlining issues, trust and courage to the forefront. I'm interested. Sure. Yeah.
For sure. Darren, you start.
I'm pondering this.
My audio guile sort of cut out the long pause.
Yeah, I figured that one. I want to be very careful because I don't want this dicey.
You won't get in trouble. I promise you won't get in trouble. Yeah. Podcasts are designed for just Michelle said it. We're supposed to have fluid conversations.
Absolutely. Sometimes my fluid gets me into a lot of trouble. I'm just saying.
Be careful, boys. Be careful where you go.
Jason, to your point, yes, there are very few males running nonprofits. They're great when they, you know, it's great when I do that. Oftentimes I walk into a room and I'm the only man in a room I'm working with committees. Yeah. And it's not necessarily from the staffing organization at the nonprofit, but it's the, a lot of events we work with schools. So it's all the moms that are coming in, and, you know, occasionally there's another gentleman that's joining me. It's like, hey, you know, let's sit over here together. Cause you know, it's 10 against two right now.
Yeah.
And that is a role, but I swear there's no way we'd ever get anything done if it was a room full of men. Women, they're the doers. I'm serious. I mean, they're the ones that get things done. They get passionate about it. It's real. It's totally real for them.
They
get it.
Darren, think about the visual that you're creating, because I've been in that room too, and I'm kind of thinking maybe what us fellas who come in the room and do that, we come in maybe overly courageous, and we're not necessarily earning their trust, because generally speaking, I would say that a lot of those let's say there's 90% women in the room, I bet they'll give you their trust faster. Maybe they will. Michelle, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Are those women likely to allow me to earn their trust faster than they are to be courageous with me? What do you think, Michelle?
I know what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean. And you know what I would say is that, yes, possibly, because we're in the trenches, right? So the women that are in the room that are sitting there are spending the volunteer hours, and you know, they're writing all the emails and calling all the sponsors and figuring out, you know, ask.
Yeah.
And if you that you come in and say, oh, well, this is easy, just do this.
Just do it, right?
You automatically say, yeah, We say, okay, yeah, whatever. We do not trust you, right? Yeah. But as soon as you relate to us and you say, oh, well, you know, you give us something that's in our wheelhouse. But one thing that I do think that you're onto, Jason, and I will say this because, you know, I'm protective of my female kind and I think that I am very courageous. However, what I do think is that if I do have Darren, if I do have you in a room where we're working, and this could be anybody, this could be a female or a male, but I do like a different perspective. I like the opposite perspective. And what I think there might be a sense of is that you're coming in from a corporate background that might be outside of a regular little volunteer organization. Yeah. So there's trust in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a bit of courage seeking, if you will. I'm not sure if that's the right word, but I like that's kind of what I relate it to. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. I like this podcast wouldn't be as much fun if we didn't have real, but we're all simmering and all of us will continue to think about this for the rest of the day. Darren, where right? Darren, be courageous and give us one more nugget of thought here on this one before we wrap this up.
I think going into that room, you said, you know, are we kind of, are the odds stacked against us walking into a room of that? I think, you know, personally, because of where I'm coming from, as a fundraiser that goes to, I'm at events, you know, most of my weekends through the year, I come in, my opening remarks is, I'm just here to help make your job easier. I understand how many hours you guys are all volunteering. And I'm going, you know, I want to hear your pain points. Michelle and I always start, you know, what's your biggest pain point? Tell us the one thing that's driving you crazy. And then from that, I get all these little cards. I'm like, all right, we got this. And I start addressing the pain points. So I'm taking responsibility or potentially projects off of their plate more so than putting things on them and just telling them, here's how to do it. I've done that before and I've been kicked out. Mm-hmm. I've been kicked out quickly. Like, okay, no, you can leave now. Thank you. Like, okay. Sorry. That didn't work. So I've learned from that. Unfortunately, I think we all learn from our mistakes. And I've learned.
Well, and I would say women aren't too hip on like my way or the highway kind of a thing. So like in general, you know, and so
really?
Well, I could just be speaking personally, but it's not our nature either though. That's like not our nature to be that way. And so we are not exactly, even if it's correct, if that's the impression that you're giving, then we'll turn it off and be like, nope, we're done with you.
Yeah, well, I commend the two of you for having found a way to, and you didn't know I was going to take you there, and I didn't know I was going to go there, but I commend the fact that it's a man and woman team, because we are serving a diverse population, and I think it's admirable that the two of you are learning to dance and serve your clients the way you are. Before I let you
Thank
go,
you.
Because we do need to let our listeners off the hook, they won't hold on much longer. Can you tell us a little bit more about the book? Remind us how we can get it. We'll make sure to put some information in the show notes, and tell us about your website and where we could find you if we're interested in working with the two of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So our book, Eventology, the Science Behind Nonprofit Fundraising, is available on Amazon. And there's the ebook and a hard copy and a soft cover and a hard copy.
Sure.
And we have an audiobook coming out probably in about 30 days. So that will be available too. And Darren, I'm going to let you talk about strategic fundraising advisors and how to find us.
Yeah, Michelle and I with strategic fundraising advisors, we often do workshops. We've got a 4-hour Eventology 101 workshops we offer, uh-huh. 101, 201, and a lot of address. I mean, Jason, you mentioned it earlier, you know, working with those crowds at AFP seminars. Yep. And working with teams of directors of development, that's what we love to do. And, you know, that whole man-woman role in that just really works well because we can generally connect with everybody in the room and have a lot of fun. And a lot like our workshops are a lot like your podcast. There is a plan. You know, we have, you know, we have some kind of pre-discussion, but we take it. It's very fluid. Right. We try to make it everything about those that are in the room, because that's where they stay engaged.
Yeah.
And that's kind of just a big piece of what we do and try to do things that way. But Michelle hit it. We're getting ready to do our audio book. We're recording that, I think, in like 2 weeks.
Are you guys
recording
it? So
that'll be a lot of fun to get that out.
Are you recording it together?
Like, we are.
Yeah.
Oh yes. Man, how do you do that? How do you synchronize on that?
Well, yeah, that's going to be a little challenging. But there's a studio we're working with.
Okay.
We're just going to sit next to each other in the studio, and she's going to read. I'm going to read the book. Our Eventology book was really written as our voices.
Yeah.
So as we go through the book,
sure.
You know, it's kind of like Michelle said. You know, I kind of authored this. I authored this, even though we totally did it together. And truth be told, Michelle did a majority of the work, but we are going to read it together. So it gets down to it. She may read the whole thing when she's sick. No, I actually did that. I may not even get a part.
No. And our...
Okay. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome.
You both, you sound like you're a lot of fun to be in the room with. When I'm on the West Coast, I'll make sure to look you up. We'll have lunch or something. You're always welcome to
come back.
We try to broadcast a couple of times a week. And so you're always welcome to come back if you got something big and bold to talk about our shared profession. Thanks again.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.